You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Andrew Garcia, in for Vicky Gonzalez. We're continuing our interviews with the 8 leading candidates for governor. Today, we share our conversation with San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan, who is a relative newcomer to the governor's race, announcing his candidacy a few months ago. But in that time, he has gained strong backing from Silicon Valley tech giants. And there's a number of local elected officials who have also endorsed him for governor. Congressmember Ami Berra, State Assembly Member Maggie Krell, Elk Grove Mayor Bobby Singh Allen, Sacramento Sheriff Jim Cooper, and Sacramento City Council Member Phil Pluckeybaum. Yet, in a crowded field, the youngest candidate in this race is polling in the single digits. Mayor Matt, as he likes to be called, sat down with Vicky Gonzalez on Thursday, talking about why he believes he's different from the other Democrats in this race.
Mayor Mahan, thank you for taking the time with us today.
Thanks for having me, Vicky.
So your career in politics started about 5 years ago. Before that, you spent time as a teacher and in the business world, starting your own company in 2014. So in 2021, sworn into San Jose as city council member, following now you're the mayor as of San Jose, of course, finishing your first term. What drew you to politics?
You know, Vicky, I grew up in a small farming town. My mom was a teacher. My dad was a mailman. And we talked about all the things at the dinner table you're not supposed to talk about, namely politics and religion. My parents thought it was really important to be civically engaged. We were paycheck to paycheck, but they always subscribed to the local newspaper and made sure my sisters and I were informed and thinking about the issues of the day. And I guess I grew up with a very optimistic belief that government is the vehicle through which we can create better outcomes for people, better opportunity. And that really mattered to me starting from a young age, because my hometown had a lot of challenges, a lot of violence, a lot of unemployment. In fact, I came over to San Jose in high school on a work study scholarship because our local high school was struggling at the time. It was not giving young people a lot of pathways to opportunity. So I've just always been civically engaged, thanks to my parents and a belief that at its best, government can do a tremendous amount of good in lifting people up.
So you announced your candidacy relatively late in the game in January. What led to this decision?
Yeah, I jumped in late, not too late for people to get to know me and ultimately get behind our campaign. But I watched the race over the course of the last year. Many of the candidates in the race had jumped in a year, even a year and a half ago. And I did not hear anyone who was really diagnosing our challenges and how they would fix them. I, you know, as a resident, but also as a mayor of a big city, I see how California is at an inflection point. On the one hand, we have the most amazing people, weather, research universities, entrepreneurs. We have so much going for us. And yet government is struggling to deliver the outcomes that matter most to people, particularly working people, housing affordability, energy affordability, public school outcomes, educational outcomes, healthcare outcomes. And what I've learned in San Jose as the mayor is that it's not always about making government bigger or asking people to pay another tax or pass another bond. Obviously, we need resources, but there's a lot of room for improving the outcomes we get by implementing better policies and being willing to think differently and admit that some of our policies aren't working in practice. I'll give you an example or two very quickly. We weren't building housing in San Jose at nearly the rate that we should be. And I challenged the status quo and said, we need to speed up permitting dramatically. We've cut it by over 50% and drop our very high one-time fees. And we cut our fees by over 2/3. And lo and behold, thousands of homes got under construction. So I believe there are solutions to even our biggest problems. Same on homelessness. We've reduced the number of people living outside in tent encampments by about 1/3 in my time as mayor, just by adding capacity in our shelter and treatment system. And when it's available, requiring people come indoors. There are pragmatic solutions, but you have to be willing to think, freely and differently and challenge the status quo.
All right. Well, of all the Democrats running, you arguably have been the most critical of Governor Gavin Newsom. Overall, what do you make of his 2 terms in office? Can you give us an example of what you would have done differently if you were governor?
Well, look, The governor and I have agreed on a lot of things. I share his values. I appreciate that he stood up to Donald Trump and this authoritarian impulse that we're seeing from the right. I stood with him on Care Court and Prop 1, which is intended to build 10,000 treatment beds, and conservatorship reform, and issue after issue. And he's been a major proponent of the interim housing that we've built in San Jose that's helped us lead the state in reducing homelessness. But I just think we should expect more from our elected leaders. We should be very open to the idea that two leaders of the same party who share values can disagree over policy. And that doesn't mean I'm always right or that he's always right. But I think it's a sad statement on our politics, frankly, when disagreeing over a policy matter creates headlines. I mean, the governor and I have had a disagreement over Prop 36, which is about getting repeat offenders into treatment and bringing some accountability back to our drug courts. We had a difference of opinion over sober living environments, which the state does not allow any state dollars to go toward. Those are honest differences of opinion. But I think sometimes the coverage of those disagreements is more interested in the blood sport of politics than really elucidating the policy disagreements. But I promise that, from my perspective at least, it's never been personal or about politics even. It's really just been about, I'm going to fight for the policy solutions that I think are best. And I don't care if somebody's a member of my party or not. If I disagree with the decisions they're making, I'm going to speak up.
What do you think that divide on Prop 36 says about the California Democratic Party, a party that has not even endorsed a candidate in this race?
Yeah, you know, I have been a somewhat different kind of Democrat, I suppose you could say, in my time in office. As you mentioned, I've been in office a little over 5 years now, and I've really tried to listen to people. I started 5 years, really 6 years ago in the campaign for city council by knocking on doors. I personally went out and knocked on over 10,000 doors. At this point, I've probably knocked on twice that. And I try to stay very close to the people. And I think there's a gap right now between the experience and the common sense of the people of California and some of the leaders within the Democratic Party. And I've tried to give voice to that, not because I want to be a fly in the ointment. And it's not really about me. It's just I want us to do our very best to be responsive to the needs of Californians and accountable for using the power of government to make their lives better. And on something like Prop 36, I share the common sense of the people of California. Obviously, it passed 70-30, but I have direct experience here. I have a cousin who spent a couple of years on the streets with a severe addiction. And what saved his life was intervention and consequences and accountability. And many members of the recovery community have a refrain, which is that there is no recovery without accountability. And one of the unintended consequences of the decarceration movement, which I've largely supported, I don't think our jails and prisons should be our de facto mental health hospitals, but one of the unintended consequences was that we really lost the efficacy within our drug courts. It became totally optional and voluntary, and we lost a lot of people. We've had thousands of people die of overdoses on our streets in recent years, and it was time to bring the pendulum back to a balance where if you've committed a crime for the third time in a year or two, a judge ought to be able to ultimately give you a choice between engaging in treatment or detoxing for at least 30 days in the county jail. And I think that we need to bring that kind of accountability back for the good of those who are out on our streets suffering from addiction and causing harm to the community, and of course, for the good of the broader community.
I mean, you have communicated that on the debate stage. There have been multiple debates at this point, and the overarching issue, of course, is affordability. One of your key proposals is to suspend the state's gas tax on day one if you're elected. That would provide immediate relief for Californians, saving them roughly 61 cents on the gallon. But the gas tax brought in close to $8 billion last year in infrastructure funding. So how would you propose to fill that gap?
You're absolutely right, Vicky. So my view is really twofold. I believe when gas is rising as quickly as it has, that we have a responsibility to provide some relief to working people, which is why I've argued that we should temporarily suspend the gas tax. But I agree with you that we need revenue for infrastructure. And what I've said is, in addition to a temporary suspension to provide some immediate relief, we need to reform the gas tax and the overall way we fund infrastructure. And I'll just make two points on this. One is, the reality today is that the gas tax has become the most regressive tax in California. Gas-powered car owners who are disproportionately low income and disproportionately come from the kinds of communities that are like the one I grew up in, rural communities, are paying 3.5 times more to maintain our roads than higher income residents, urban residents, and EV owners in particular. And I believe that we need to rebalance this so that rather than having a low-income family paying $350 a year to maintain our roads while an EV owner pays $100, we should equalize that and have a flat fee for every vehicle with registration. That's a fairer, more reasonable way to do it. I also think in our dense urban areas that actually have the worst traffic, you can use new tools like express lanes where those who want to go faster can pay more, and that generates hundreds of millions of dollars for maintenance. And I would also just add this. We have a state budget that has grown 75% in the last 6 years. It's a $350 billion budget. Plenty of other states, in fact, every other state, maintains its roads, in many cases, maintain their roads better than we do in California without gas taxes as high as California's. And I know that for a fact because we have the highest gas tax in the country of any state. So I think we need to rebalance. It's not about totally eliminating it necessarily, but we shouldn't be maintaining our roads on the backs of our lowest income residents. I think it's wrong.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan, a Democrat who is running for governor. We only have a few minutes left. Your campaign has received a lot of contributions from billionaires, Silicon Valley tech figures, venture capitalists. In your campaign bio, you write that you live down the hall from Mark Zuckerberg at Harvard. So for voters who are wary of corporate interests and their influence in the governor's race and politics in general, how do you respond to those concerns and appeal to them given this big money support?
Yeah, I mean, I would point out all of the candidates have big donors who have contributed to their campaign, just to be fair. I think this has been a convenient—
Including Katie Porter?
Yes, all of them. Absolutely. They all spent a lot of time in places like Palo Alto and Pacific Heights raising money. But and we do have an actual billionaire in the campaign who has already spent $150 million. But look, it's a fair criticism, and I'll answer it directly. I am the mayor of the largest city in Silicon Valley, and people who live and work in tech have seen the progress we've made. And I think that the primary reason that there are tech employers and tech workers who have invested in this campaign is that they've seen how I've led San Jose to become the safest big city in the country, to lead the state in reducing unsheltered homelessness, and to get thousands of homes under construction. And they like the level of competence and the outcomes that we're getting. That being said, Vicky, I share the concern about the power of technology, and I actually think it's an asset that I understand this industry because I know how to leverage these tools to make life better. We're using technology in San Jose to speed up our buses and improve language translation and things like that. But I also know the risks, and I'm concerned about privacy and surveillance and job loss and automation that doesn't have a human in the loop. In issues like healthcare and criminal justice and job decisions. So what I'm bringing is a very balanced perspective. I have one of the more ambitious AI regulatory frameworks that would— I've proposed banning cell phones in schools, requiring parental consent for social media, requiring that a human be in the loop when automated systems are weighing in on decisions related to employment, healthcare, criminal justice outcomes. I think, and in fact, in San Jose, I demand that any new data centers meet the strictest sustainability standards and pay the full cost of infrastructure so that we're not driving up energy bills for other ratepayers. I think we absolutely need to regulate tech, and even more, we need to use the tax revenue from these growing tech companies to invest in our people, our workforce. San Jose, again, has been a model. We created the most ambitious AI upskilling curriculum for our city workforce to ensure that they're not replaced by AI, but that they have the tools and training they need to use new tools in the workplace to be more productive and to stay ahead of this technological change. So I think I really believe it is an asset. It will be an asset for our next governor to understand the tools, the positive side, but also the risks, and understand how to effectively regulate the industry without simply pushing it to other states or other countries, because there is a balance that we need to strike. But I'll be really clear. I've always stood up against the establishment and the special interests, and that includes the tech industry.
So, as we wind this conversation down, you mentioned you're mayor of one of the largest cities in the state, about 1 million people in the Silicon Valley. You're also from a small city of Watsonville, about an hour outside of San Jose. But there are large rural swaths statewide, and we've had so many conversations on our show about a reality that in California, it's not necessarily political party divides, R&D, but a difference between rural and urban views. And people in rural communities often feel overshadowed by large metro politics. What is your relationship with the rural parts of the state? How would you represent their needs as governor?
Yeah, Vicky, it's a great question. So I grew up outside of Watsonville in the unincorporated rural area of Santa Cruz County in farmland, surrounded by fields. I remember hearing the tractors spraying methyl bromide at night when I was a kid, and my parents telling us, shut the windows because it's cancer-causing. I know what it's like for rural communities that are under-resourced, often forgotten by Sacramento, feel like an afterthought. And as governor, I'm going to put an emphasis on working families and rural communities because we got to lift everybody up. And the truth is, the Central Valley and the Inland Empire, where we're seeing the greatest population growth. It's where we have more kids, more families. Actually, the future of the state is increasingly in and around our rural and agrarian communities. And we need to ensure that our public schools there are top notch and that people have access to healthcare. And I think it's going to take innovation. The answer can't always be more taxes and more revenue. It's also got to be better public services, better, more efficient use of our resources and more innovation. But it's top of mind for me because of where I grew up. I still go visit my mom, who's still down on the outskirts of Watsonville in a little rural area. And I talk to the neighbors I grew up side by side with who are there, and they're living it every day and don't feel like Sacramento is really paying attention to them. So it's very top of mind for me.
Finally, in the last few seconds that we have, as far as the governor's race is concerned, you've been on the stage for the major debates, but you've also been regularly polling in single digits. The poll that you've performed the best in was the one that you commissioned recently, showing at about 10%. So what is the path that you see to winning over more voters now that early voting is already underway?
Well, yeah, I feel great about our progress. Our internal poll, which is done by one of the most reputable firms in the country, is a very high quality poll, showed me starting at 1%, 3%, then 3%, then 5%, and now at 10%. We've seen similar movement in other polls, and I think we're on the right trajectory. I'm offering something very different. I'm a different kind of Democrat who has held my own party establishment accountable for delivering better results in people's lives. I may have gotten in the race late, but not too late to win this thing, and we're absolutely rising in the polls and offering something that I think Californians are looking for. So we're going to push hard to the finish line and make the case for the vision that I and many other Californians have for a government that is accountable for doing better before we ask people to pay more.
Mayor Mahan, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, Vicky. It was great catching up with you. Appreciate your time.
That was San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan. The Democrat is running for governor and sat down with Vicky Gonzalez last Thursday. Insight has reached out to all eight of the leading Democratic and Republican candidates in the California's governor's race. All have been interviewed except Democrats Tom Steyer and Javier Becerra. Steyer's team has declined multiple requests, instead offering supporters to speak on his behalf. The invitation remains open for him to join. Becerra canceled a scheduled interview and asked to reschedule, but no date has yet been confirmed. You can find our series of interviews at capradio.org/govrace. Still ahead, the longtime conductor of the Sacramento Master Singers is retiring after 40 years. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Andrew Garcia. We're back in just a moment.